Do you want to host the Olympics? It's going to cost you. How about the World Cup? That could cost even more. The country of Qatar plans to spend $200 billion hosting that event in 2022. With the selection of Boston as the U.S. candidate to host the 2024 Summer Olympics, the benefits and risks connected with staging large sporting events is once again provoking discussion. Economist Andrew Zimbalist's new book, Circus Maximus, subtitled The Economic Gamble Behind Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup, explores these matters. Andrew, welcome back to Only a Game.
Good to be with you, Bill. Thank you.
You have written that your, quote, cynicism about our political process as far as it impacts bidding for the opportunity to host the Olympics has reached an all-time high. Why is that?
In February of 2013, the United States Olympic Committee sent out a letter to 50 cities around the United States inviting them to submit bids to be the U.S. selection in the international competition to host the 2024 Olympic Games. Boston didn't do very much until one day Mitt Romney went to Deval Patrick and said, this would be really interesting for us to do. It'd be good for the city. And Deval Patrick said, okay, I'll go to the legislature and I'll try to scare up some money to look into this. And the legislature gave him some money, and he, together with the mayor, created a commission of 11 people to look into the feasibility of hosting the Olympic Games. The people who were appointed to the commission came from the hospitality industry and the construction industry. And of course, the construction industry is the industry that stands most to benefit because they're going to get all the contracts. There's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 billion or more of construction contracts that will go to the largest construction companies. And they were the ones who were looking into the feasibility of this for Boston. At no point over the last year has there been a vote or even a discussion in the Boston City Council or the state legislature to say, this is great, we actually want to do this.
Has the budget put together by a city bidding for the Olympics or a country bidding to host the World Cup ever turned out to accurately reflect the cost?
No. In fact, there was a study just recently completed out of Oxford University in England that went back and looked at, in this case, all of the Olympics, not the World Cup events, and they found that the average cost overrun, that is to say, if you compare the initial bid that the city puts out there, instead of saying, here's what we're going to spend. London, by the way, had an initial bid of $5 billion and ended up at $17 billion. They said the average cost overrun for the Summer Olympics between 1976 and today was 252%. That's a 3.5 times increase over the initial bid. And so Boston has to think about that, because what it means is they put out an initial bid of $4 billion. You multiply that by 3.5 times and you're up around $14 billion. And London only generated $1.4 billion in private sector support. If London only generated $1.4 billion, how is Boston going to generate more than that? And we're looking at a bill that's probably well over $14 billion. And that, of course, means taxes. It means public support from Boston and from the state.
The International Olympic Committee and FIFA, International Soccer's governing body, have each faced what you term rising popular protests. Did the protests in Brazil just come too late to affect the actual presence of the Olympics and the World Cup? Because protests in several European countries have led those countries to withdraw bids.
Yeah, that's right. They came too late. In the case of the Winter Olympics for 2022, there were six bidders out there a year and a half ago. There was Davos in Switzerland, there was Stockholm, there was Munich in Germany, and there was Oslo in Norway. Of those four European cities I just mentioned, three of them had referendums and the people voted that they wanted to have nothing to do with it, so they withdrew their bids. In the case of Oslo, Norway, the government took a closer look at the costs that were evident, and they said, this is too expensive for us, we don't want to do it anyway. So now the IOC is left with two bidders. One of them is Almaty, Kazakhstan, and the other is Beijing, China. Both of them, of course, authoritarian countries where you presumably can more easily get away with a bid that ignores the real social needs of a country.
The most recent Summer Olympics, the 2012 Games in London, were supposed to end up providing new affordable housing, more jobs, and better transportation for people living in East London. 3 years on, has that turned out to be the case?
It's probably the case that there's been a little progress in some of those areas, but nothing like what was promised. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, they spent $17 billion doing this. And maybe 2 or 3 or 4 billion of those dollars were spent productively improving transportation networks and improving some infrastructure that helps the lives of at least some people. But it's important to point out that East London was already an area that was transforming itself. It's already a new financial district had sprung up. Already the Stratford Rapid Rail Station was operative. So a lot of things that have happened in East London are things that were happening despite the Olympics, not because of the Olympics.
The final chapter of Circus Maximus suggests several ways in which a system that's corrupt and full of misleading or false promises could be reformed. And the IOC has recently approved some modest changes. Be optimistic for a moment, Andrew. Can this situation be improved?
Well, I think it can be improved. Whether it can be improved to my satisfaction and everybody's satisfaction is a different question. But look, one of the obvious things that's going on here is that in any particular bidding year, and the bidding usually starts 11 years before the games themselves, and then it's 7 years before the games that the IOC anoints a winner. What's actually happening is that you have one seller in the case of the Olympics, the IOC. You have one seller in the case of the World Cup, FIFA. And you have cities or countries from around the world that are bidding against each other. So you have multiple bidders and you have one seller. It's a monopoly situation, and the monopolist takes advantage of that. That's the fundamental structural problem. So one of the ways that it seems to me that would be constructive to reform the system would be either the IOC and or FIFA to say, what we're going to do is we're going to have a continental rotation so that every new Olympic Games, there'll be a new continent that gets to host the Games. So I think that one of the interesting reforms would be to go after the monopoly structure and say that the competition will only be within one continent for every 4-year period.
Andrew Zimbalist is the author of Circus Maximus, The Economic Gamble Behind Hosting the Olympics and the World Cup. Andrew, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
For a minimalist sample of Circus Maximus, you can read an excerpt at onlyagame.org, where you can also find my review of the book.